You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I spoke to Jared Hare, National Secretary for United Union, about recent changes to NZ Post Employment Agreement, which banned New Zealand Post from making employees be available to work overtime without being paid for it. So I started by asking him to give me an overview of what happened in the case the Postal Workers Union took to court.
The issue revolves around requirement of workers to undertake extra work beyond what their guaranteed hours are. So in this case, the posties are guaranteed hours of 9 hours, 25 minutes a day, but on the days where they're short-staffed or they've got a lot of mail, they were expected to work half an hour and a half, even up to 2 hours extra on that day and not have a choice about it. No one's got a problem with the employer asking and the employees agreeing. No problem with that. The issue was they were told they had to. And that's a breach of the zero-hour changes to ban zero-hour contracts that Unite Union fought very hard for. And the court decision, it's a full court, so it's three employment court judges looking at it very carefully, came down very clearly. You simply cannot require people to work longer than they're guaranteed hours unless you pay them reasonable compensation and additional allowance, not just for the work, you have to pay them for it anyway, but for being available to work when you want to, not by just by agreement.
Okay, so could you tell me a little bit more about how someone making themselves available for overtime, whether they know they're going to be working or not, would affect their daily life?
Right, well, in the case, one postie, the example they used, Michael Hunter, who plays in an orchestra, and a community orchestra, and he needs to be able to get to practice, like anything. So he couldn't guarantee that he'd be able to go to practice because the practice time was after his rostered finish time. But of course, on any given practice night, Post could say, hey, we need you to work for an extra couple of hours. So he'd miss practice. So it does have an impact. That's one example. But if you think of, you know, the difficulties it would cause, for instance, childcare, as anyone who's had to arrange childcare will know, at very short notice, because remember, this was happening on the day. They turn up for work at sort of 7 o'clock in the morning and then be told that they have to work extra. So very short notice, imagine trying to scramble to find an extra couple of hours of childcare. In most cases, you just wouldn't be able to do it. You know, you just about they will not be able to accommodate that. So it does create a lot of problems and restrictions on people, on their lives. And the law, and now the Employment Court has clearly said, you can't do that without either agreement, without guaranteeing the hours, that's known, or by paying them a reasonable compensation for it.
I also just want to circle back a little bit. So could you tell me a little bit about zero-hour employment contracts?
Well, it's the key is what we call reciprocity, right? Which is like that if you give something, or that there should be something in return. The zero-hour contract were simply that the workers were expected to turn up for work, right? They had to turn up for work, but in return, the employer wasn't going to guarantee them any week that they had work. So it was unfair. There was a huge imbalance. So what the campaign we fought for was to get guaranteed hours for fast food workers initially, which we've got. And so what that means is that if you want them to show up for work, you've got to play your part too. You've got to guarantee them their hours to work, because it's fine if you're working 30 hours one week and it's going along, that quite happens, but then suddenly you're down to 10 or even zero in some cases, you know, and that makes it impossible. How can people live their lives, pay their rent, look after their families if they don't know how many hours, if there's no guarantee of hours each week? So it's a simple and the law change which was finally negotiated, not perfect, but what it has clearly set out is that there's got to be that reciprocity. If you want people to turn up, if you expect your workers to turn up, then you basically have to guarantee them that work. And in our collective agreement, this case looked at the additional overtime, but our concern is that we know in the hospitality industry in particular, because the hours are so variable and there's so much casual work, that there are probably tens if not hundreds of thousands of workers who are guaranteed very few hours, maybe as little as three or four, even none, but are expected, will get in trouble if they don't turn up to all the shifts they're given. Now, that's actually wrong. If they're guaranteed 3 hours, then they only actually have to show up for 3 hours each week. The rest is voluntary. Now, that's not actually how it's working, we know. So in this case, I think it can clearly, you know, employers need to take notice, workers need to take notice. They need to ask, how many guaranteed hours have I got? Okay, then go to the employer and the employee and need to say, okay, how many hours do you actually need me to show up for each week? Because because what that means is if I don't show up, if you guaranteed me 10 hours, but you rostered me 20, you're going to realise I don't have to show up for those last 10 hours. You can't discipline me. You can't be disadvantaged in any way the law says for not showing up for non-guaranteed hours. So that's the issue, and that's the key importance. That's why the reason it's really important to highlight, because we know that there are many, many employers who are not actually complying with the law as it is.
Okay, great. So I just also wanted to ask you, why do you think that NZ Post had these employment terms in place to begin with?
They were in place. They really, even though there has been negotiations, there should have been amended at negotiation last time. There was a failure to reach agreement at negotiations. So at that pace, the Postal Workers Union said, right, well, we think you're wrong, so we're going to take it, get a court to decide, because that's actually the only option. If you can't negotiate an agreement, then in the end you have to actually go to the Employment Authority and the Employment Court, as they did in this case, to actually get the court to make a decision. And now, my understanding is they're going to mediation to see if they can negotiate. The option they've got is negotiating allowance, right? So you can have availability, but you've got to pay for it, and it's got to be reasonable compensation. So that may be one outcome, and that's an option for other employers too. But the interesting thing is, so far we've found we've raised this numerous times. Now, if you want that availability, you're going to have to pay for it, and they've been very reluctant to do that. Instead, they've tended to go with just the guaranteed hours, and that's okay as long as employees aren't put under pressure to do extra hours. Now, so we work hard in the sites we have, particularly in hospitality, fast food, hotels, casinos, all to make sure that doesn't happen. But we know that out where there's no union coverage in a lot of smaller bars, restaurants across the country, that doesn't happen. That people aren't aware of that. So this is a key thing. It's a big issue for particularly younger women, right, who we find regularly in this situation where they're promised lots of hours, but when they look at the fine print, the writing, it only says 3 or 4 or 10, but they're actually expected to work 20, 30, and they need to work 20, 30, 40 hours. The problem is, at any point, the employer can simply drop it back to the guaranteed hours, and I think a lot of young workers don't realise that until it happens and it's too late.
And finally, do you have any additional comments that you'd like to make?
Yeah, as I said, I think anyone who's got variable hours, actually it also applies to open salaries too, it actually does. Even if you have salary, regular hours, as in this case, as in the Post case, if you're working extra hours and you're expected to work extra hours, it applies to you too. But I think it's particularly, every worker should know, what are my guaranteed hours? They need to find out, and look at their contract or ask the employer, what are my guaranteed hours? And if there's no allowance or availability, if there's no extra payment for being available, then those are the hours you have to work. If your employer wants you to work extra hours and needs you to work extra hours, they either need to increase guaranteed hours to cover them by agreement, or you need to pay your allowance. So I think every worker needs to ask that as an employer. I think that's the key.
I think that's really good advice, actually.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.